I'd like to bring to order the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency. Good afternoon, committee. Today we're going to start off with a different order than starting at the top, so just want to alert people to that, because they're used to my consistent approach to our agendas. But we're going to start out with House Bill 3166 and 3167 first, and then we're going to go to House Bill 3144 and 3145, and after that, I'm not sure. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3166 and a public hearing on House Bill 3167 concurrently. And Representative Nathanson, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from District 13. I bring these ideas to you that were developed as part of the State and Local Government Efficiency Task Force effort. There was a subcommittee on natural resources, and in working together between the state and local government, there were a number of ideas kicked around. A couple of them had to do with how we do on-site septic tank inspections and how the on-site septic system program works. It doesn't work real well all the time, in some cases because of the constrained situations faced in rural counties. There are just different circumstances of who's available, what resources can you bring to bear to do the work that needs to be done from one county to another. So there were two different concepts that are developed about making it a little bit more flexible to figure out who is allowed to do these inspections. The choice is pretty unfortunate. If there isn't anyone to do an inspection, or it takes too long, or it's too costly, what do? You just don't do an inspection, and then we're not meeting our obligation to the public to ensure life, health, safety standards that we know are important. So rather than face the option of doing no inspections, how can we help create an environment where inspections can happen safely and appropriately and in the most cost-effective manner? I'm going to leave it to the people who developed the recommendations to tell you exactly how they work. We know that in one case, on one of the bills, it may be appropriate to provide an amendment for you. After you hear the discussion, you may determine that there are some alternatives that we should consider in how we do certifying to make sure that people are appropriately trained, and we've got the individuals to do it. I guess my hope is that we'll keep our eyes on the ball, which is how can we create a situation where we can continue to do these inspections and that the right work will be done at the right time. And how can we do it most effectively? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for giving us that introduction. Instead of having Bob do them all the time, I find that you're able to do them quite effectively. And I appreciate that. In committee, I think we're just going to jump right into the panel and let Representative Nathanson go, because I'm sure everybody else can answer the questions. Thank you very much. And up next, I want to have Dick Peterson and Mike Kaczynski. Good afternoon. If you'd identify yourselves for the record, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Dick Peterson, Director of Department of Environmental Quality. And with me is Mike Kaczynski, who is the manager of the on-site septic system program with the state DEQ. And I want to start out, certainly we're going to introduce to you 3166 and 3167. And I won't repeat what Representative Nathanson said, but certainly it was these were products of the local government efficiency, state and local government efficiency task force, which I had the honor of serving on. And it was a pleasure, and I really appreciate Representative Nathanson's leadership. Also on your committee, Representative Thatcher was a member of that group as well. was a really good experience, and so these two proposed bills came out of that that committee work. We do support the bills, DEQ does. However, as Representative Nathanson said, we do understand that there's some concerns with House Bill 3166, and we're very willing to work with those that have some concerns to work out some amendments to that to make it more workable. And before I turn it over to Mike, certainly our intent with these bills is to make sure that the services that are provided are we work hard with counties in particular who can provide those services as well to inspect, put on-site septic systems into facilities and homes that need those. So I'm pleased that we're working towards that end to make it more efficient in working with the counties. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Mike, who will explain a little bit about the program and what the bills do.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Mike Kaczynski, on-site program manager for the Department of Environmental Quality. And there are some maps that will be coming around that I'll be referring to here. So one-third of Oregonians do rely on septic systems, and in the more rural areas of the state, that number is a bit higher. I'm going to be focusing on the siting and permitting of septic systems.
That Mike, can you flip that microphone up, just not closer, just up a little bit. There you go, thanks.
Is that a little better?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to focus on the siting and the permitting of septic systems. And the siting is where you'd go out and look at test pits that were dug with a backhoe and determine what kind of septic system could be installed. Then the permitting would be the construction and inspection of those systems. So the map that was passed out will show the distribution of county-run programs and DEQ-run programs. And you can see that the there's quite a spacing on the DEQ programs, and that does create some problems for us to run a statewide program. So we do need to cover the work in all of those counties. So the specific problems that we were trying to address with the task force was that the number of qualified individuals available to do the work is relatively small, and that's especially true in the rural areas of the state. The farther away you get from the Portland metro area and the Willamette Valley, the more difficult time it is to find qualified people. And also should be known that the workforce that is available, it's an aging workforce, and so people will be retiring, as which is true in many cases now, and getting new people into the program has been difficult. Registration as an environmental health specialist or a wastewater specialist with the Oregon Health Licensing Agency is a requirement to do this type of work, and that's true for all duties of the program, even those that may be lower risk. A Bachelor of Science degree is required as well, and the local units of government, we can contract with them only, and they cannot subcontract that work. So what the bills would do, 3166, it would authorize environmental health technicians to perform some of the duties of an environmental health specialist, and it would establish registration requirements. Registration as an environmental health technician would not require a Bachelor of Science degree, but there would be some minimum education and experience requirements. It's kind of modeled after the National Environmental Health Association's certification of an environmental health technician. 3167 would allow DEQ and its contract counties to hire qualified private individuals. And this is similar to the provision for performing licensing, inspection, and enforcement duties under the Oregon Health Authority's Food, Pools, and Lodging Program. So the intent was to just change the employer-employee relationship, but not the actual qualifications for those individuals performing that work. So some of the expected benefits that we're expecting is for 3166, the ability for DEQ or a contract county to hire individuals with less stringent qualifications to perform the lower risk duties in the program. That may reduce costs for DEQ and our contract counties and would provide another option when hiring individuals to perform that work. Some expected benefits of 3167 would be that the DEQ or Contract County could hire a private contractor, and it would be more cost-effective, and again, it provides another option when hiring individuals to perform that work. So some of the things I wanted to make note of is that we do try to keep the cost as low as we can to encourage people to apply for permits, and that's especially true for repair permits. The higher costs tend to discourage people from actually applying for permits, and then that increases our compliance work and the associated costs with that. So since 2009, DEQ has not inspected approximately 35% of the newly constructed septic systems, and that's because we just couldn't meet the timelines. And the map will show that the blue counties are the DEQ counties, and the green ones are the contract counties. And we can't afford to have an individual staff person in each office in each county that we run, so we have to cover multiple counties with people from different offices. And by law, the installers of the septic systems can actually cover the system without an inspection if it goes beyond 7 days. But by and large, most installers want inspections. They make occasional mistakes, and they want a second set of eyes on things because they're the first people to get the call if something goes wrong and the homeowner has a problem with their septic system. But they also want the inspections to be quick because when their equipment is down, it's not making them money. So we're definitely trying to find ways to perform the work more quickly at the lowest possible cost while still being protective of public health and the environment. And we do believe that House Bill 3166 and 3167 do take a step in that direction. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And just, you know, to be clear that these types of inspectors aren't regulated by the Building Codes Division. They're regulated by DEQ?
Chair Holvey, that is correct. They're not regulated by the Building Codes Division, but there's a regulation from the Oregon Health Licensing Agency. That's the part that has the environmental health specialist and wastewater specialist regulations.
Right. Okay. Just wanted to make sure that I knew what we were talking about. Question, Ms. Representative Lively?
Sure, I just have a clarification. So just a few words back, you mentioned about contract versus non-contract. So the blue are the ones that you directly inspect. And then you talked about contract, and this map talks about local government. So I'm just confused who the contract with or who is doing those inspections.
Chair Holvey, Representative Lively, the contracts are with the individual county. So when I say contract counties,
okay.
Yes.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
Representative Doherty.
That was my question.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to figure out what problem that we're trying to solve, especially if you're talking about Malheur County. Okay, I mean, we're not talking about constructing skyscrapers. We're talking about digging trenches, making sure your drain fills work, digging a hole, making sure that the concrete box fits in there and that it flows into your drain field and that the line from the house goes into the concrete box. And yet you're saying, if I'm correct, that EEQ needs to, we need to have certified people that have a college education to inspect in Malheur County or Harney County or Lake County some farmhouse to make sure that it's done according to what the EEQ and others feel is appropriate. Why is that necessary to expand DEQ, to expand your budgets, to hire more people, and to regulate who can be certified to be able to inspect a septic system when everybody kind of knows what's involved with septic systems, unless it's a complicated kind of thing, which is not normal in Malheur County?
Chair Holden, Representative Richardson, the current regulations require the Bachelor of Science degree, the Environmental Health Specialist or Wastewater Specialist, and the bills would actually create a lower classification that doesn't need as much education and experience. So there are parts of the program. The siting of a system, knowing what the soils are like, and those sorts of things would certainly be the more the higher risk ones. We want to make sure we get that right. But the inspections of systems and the newly constructed systems, we believe those could be done by someone that doesn't have those full qualifications.
Okay. May I ask another question?
Please.
Thank you.
I said that enthusiastically.
That's great. Right now, DEQ does a third, and two-thirds are not being done by DEQ. Is it the intent that DEQ will assume responsibility either directly or indirectly for all 36 counties, or is there an expanding of DEQ's mission here?
Maybe I can try that. Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, actually, we really encourage counties to take the program and run them themselves, and perhaps you'll hear a little bit about that later. What we like to do is, if counties wants to have the program and put it forward, we're more than happy to work out a contract with the counties, and we're certainly not trying to take more responsibility on in terms of county responsibility. We feel the counties themselves are you know, they're in the county and they can respond quicker, and if they have the capacity to do the inspections, then that's what we're trying to do with, you know, with 3167 is to give them a little more flexibility with contracting some of those services and hiring, getting people on board that can do that quickly. But we're supporting that, not trying to get more counties into our jurisdiction.
Okay, thank you. And just real quick, I'm curious with the whole idea of septic systems and making sure they function properly is an important issue. Are there any consequences or federal requirements for the state or the county not making sure that we have functioning septic systems in the state?
Go ahead.
Chair Holby, there is a Coastal Zone Management Act that does talk about ensuring that septic systems are inspected on a regular basis and that failing systems are fixed. It only applies to the coastal zone, and we're currently trying to work out a program for that.
Thanks. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell us what the cost savings might be by doing this? Per inspection?
Chair Holby, Representative Kenny Geyer, it's a hard one to put a number on. The biggest savings that we could see, the example that I hear a lot is in rural Oregon, say you're in Lake or Harney County, something like that, and you have a building inspector who needs to go out and do some inspections on a house. Could that person become a certified environmental health technician and then not only inspect the building but also inspect the septic system, that, you know, thereby saving quite a bit of staff time to have two people go out there? So
there's a staff time, and is there a differential in pay between the environmental health specialist and the I forget what you called it,
the certified environmental health technician,
right?
I guess that would be up to the employers. With less qualifications, I suppose you could make that argument that would be a lesser paying job. Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm intrigued by the concept. I come from a county where we do all of our inspections within the county. We have a county sanitarian who handles everything from drain field, septic tank inspections to restaurants. He does it all in regards to public health and so forth. But there are certainly circumstances where his workload gets extensive and it's difficult to make it out. Some of these times you have time sensitive issues regarding weather and so forth. You get a ditch open, you get your drain field in, you need to get that covered up because the weather can make that thing all go south on you. But if in fact it'd be possible to have a county building official who could be, you know, meet the criteria, who also when the point in time he's out there performing a framing inspection or something else on the building envelope could also just take a quick look at the drain field, looks fine, covered up, could be helpful. Regarding the fees, you know, those are pretty much established locally. I believe they have the authority to do that, and I would say there's been an exponential rise in the cost of fees over the past 20 years from what they used to be to what they are now, but some of that, I believe, is due to some of the excessive, perhaps, requirements for the training and certification of the folks. So I would hope that it would give the counties at least the ability to maybe hold the line on some of those fees because the inspection process could be less expensive. So, I mean, I think it's a good idea. I applaud the task force for work on this and trying to make it streamline those inspection processes at the local level outside of the metro area where maybe you don't have access to as many as much manpower as you do. So,
yeah, thank you, Richard.
I'm hopeful,
Johnson,
at least at this point in time.
I think you've sort of hit the theme of this these two bills right on the head there. So I appreciate your testimony today. And in light of those conversations, we do have some people from rural Oregon, some county commissioners, and a county commissioner and a county judge. So let's have up Ken Kestner and Steve Grasty. I believe I probably butchered your name already. And there's one other person, Scott Campbell, if you wouldn't mind coming up as well. Welcome, gentlemen. I know you've traveled from a far away, and I've had the pleasure of visiting the Harney County Courthouse before. And
speeding public.
Why?
That's what I wondered too.
God, you really do search public records. welcome, Jim. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Lake County Commissioner Ken Kestner from Lake County.
You want to start?
Well, I'm just a country boy. I'll let you start.
I'm Steve Grasty, and I'm Harney County Judge and Chair Holvey and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity. I'd like to start out with a couple of things. First, I really want to say thanks to Representative Nathanson and the Government Efficiency Task Force, because they put a lot of effort into getting us some ideas that will make things more efficient. And I can never sit in front of a committee that has Representative Smith on it without commenting on his baby brother that now lives in our county and how he uses up quite a bit of the fishing resources that are available. I don't know what you can do about that.
At least it's not the courthouse.
I was intrigued listening to the questions. And as far as counties taking over the programs, we did it, generally speaking, almost without exception, because our folks simply weren't getting inspections. Paid the $900 fee. No one showed up. You covered it up, and you hoped that the installer had done it right. And I will tell you that in 99 times out of 100, it was absolutely done right. This is true about my home, and I suspect most of us in rural Oregon. We have a very stringent in-house regulatory authority in each house. If the wife says there's something in the backyard smells bad, you get it fixed. So we're very aware of this.
You get it fixed quickly.
Yes, thank
so
you. That's
have
true.
Folks from home.
This program, we're saying environmental health technician. And in my mind, it really needs to be simply focused around on-site septic systems. Is where the issue is. I want to tell you a quick horror story in our case about how onerous the regulations are. We have a gentleman in our community, I think he's 67 years old. He's retired. He retired from NRCS, was a soil scientist. I believe he has a master's degree. Was the president of the Oregon Soil Scientists Association, could teach any course that was required to do inspections. To hire him and for him to do the work, he'd be happy to do that and would love to. He wants some on-the-ground help with someone else who has the experience, so he knows what he's looking at in the construction side of it. But he has to have 3,820 hours beside someone else before he can get certified to do these inspections. And we need about 100 hours a year, including travel time. So we think if he lives to be 108, that we'll be able to get him certified eventually. So there is a need to do a little bit of relaxation on this. You heard a couple of different folks say this, including the good representative, but I think we need to do a little tweaking, and I hope there will be an allowance to have some time on 3166 to bring it back with a few corrections, because there's some folks nervous about how wide it is, and maybe we can make it narrower to focus on septic systems. 3167, we simply need it. There's an anomaly in the law that makes it very difficult for counties to be flexible in the way we'll go about delivering it. Not cheaper. I can tell you that our master's degree gentleman is not a cheap guy to have by the hour, but he's way cheaper than dealing overall with the DEQ and a few times we need to bring him in. We have a great success story about contracting out in Harney County. We contracted out mental health. I happen to sit on that board of directors, and I can tell you that every one of those employees makes considerably more than they did when they were a county employee. They're now in the private sector, and we grew a bunch of jobs in our community, and their benefit package exceeds the one that the county had. So there was a real success story for us going through that, and I think we can and would balance this and would really want to as well. And I'd be happy to answer your question. I'm sure the others do want a chance.
I want to go ahead and listen to the rest.
I'll echo.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, just identify yourself for the record, please.
Kent Kastner, Lake County Commissioner. I'll echo what Judge Grasty mentioned and what was mentioned by Representative Johnson also, I believe you, is that to have a person come in and inspect the cover-up is more along the line of a building official or a licensed plumber. To call in the sewer scientist to do it, you're talking about 150 miles to get from one end of Lake County to the other. And the one we use, we contract, we serve Harney County also. So sometimes it's overnight trips just to get that one outlying house. But if you have a building official or somebody else or a trainee that can offshoot and pick that up. Thing is, if you go past 7 days, the contractor can just fill it in. I mean, it's permitted. And they don't want to do that, and we don't want to do that either. But one thing that gets me a lot is that the person doing this will call up the septic person who cannot make it, septic person say, well, take a picture and send it to me along with your $900 check.
Exactly.
That's insulting to me and insulting to the person who's doing the septic. So we need to tweak it. Oh, I'll add one more. Lake County also have Desi Samudio, who retired from Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management, who could teach his person more about soil science. But he won't be able to live to be 108, though. So that criteria, it goes through the licensing board, I realize that. But we need to streamline it so that we can get the service out there. Our citizen would be happy to comply if it was efficient and got the money worth with a face-to-face person out there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Scott Campbell. I'm a veterinarian, and I own Sylvie's Valley Ranch, right on the northern end of Harney County. And I'm the one that's paying that $900. You know, we've put in on our ranch since we bought it 6 years ago about 14 different septic systems, and it's not rocket science, you know, and covering them up is definitely not rocket science. And to get an inspection, we built a new kidding barn last summer and fall, and it literally took 6 weeks to get the inspector there, you know, which came from Lake County, you know, driving all the way to the northern end of Harney County, which has got to be 250 miles each way to do, you know, literally, I was there when he was there. It was 10 minutes, including, you know, 8 minutes of bullshitting, you know. You know, this is just not a good use of resources. And it's not hard stuff. I had, you know, two soils classes at Oregon State, and, you know, I could do this, you know. We really need some efficiency because it adds just a tremendous amount of cost. And it's, you know, those dollars could be spent in a lot of better ways, besides buying, you know, gas, you know, and sending the money to the Middle East. And so, you know, I just hope that the, you know, committee will give our agencies and our counties some flexibility, you know, to really, you know, do the right thing, you know, and get the appropriate level of people, you know, to do the inspections and those kinds of things when they need to be done. But, you know, a septic tank in the desert is not, you know, that tough. You know, you couldn't get it to run anywhere anyway, you know. So anyway, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Questions from the committee?
I do have a comment.
Comment, Representative Doherty.
Well, your two gentlemen may live to be 108, because I've been both to Harney and Lake County and Mulhura County, and it's good life down there, so they may live to be 108.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's always good to have folks from Eastern Oregon visiting us. I don't have a question, just a comment. I just want you to know I was in Harney County here about 15 days ago, and you folks are blessed to live where you live, and Lake County is just as beautiful. So we're glad you're in the capital.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I really wasn't there for a speeding ticket. We were there doing a redistricting hearing, actually. So, and it's odd that you'd be here and have this public hearing. We didn't schedule it, but we are actually going to work two bills that will provide you some more flexibility to the rural counties as well. So, small but improvements for counties, I think, and hopefully cost saving as well. I really appreciate you coming all this way to give us your point of view. We heard you, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3166 and close the public hearing on House Bill 3167. And committee, I think in honor of the officials here, we're going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2212. Jumping a little bit out of order. Yeah. Representative Wibley.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2212 be passed to the floor with a due pass, moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Wibley moves House Bill 2212 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Bob, why don't you remind us what this bill does?
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2212 increases the maximum amount of procurement that qualifies as a small procurement under the Public Contracting Code from $5,000 to $10,000. The measure has no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement has been issued.
Thank you. Any discussion about this bill? Thank you very much. Samantha, could we have a vote?
Representative Doherty?
Yes, aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative
Kinney Geyer? Aye. Representative Smith? Aye. Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 2212, having received the card votes, is passed to the floor. Shall we put this on the consent calendar committee, or does anybody want to talk about it?
No, it's okay.
Now we'll go ahead and put this on the consent calendar then. Close the work session on 2212. Open a work session on House Bill 2829.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2829 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 2829 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Again, Bob, can you give us some information about what bill we're voting on today?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2829 allows a county to comply with posting requirements for monthly expenditure reports via the internet or choice of county courthouse or library bulletin boards. It allows for notice of availability of posted materials via the internet, newspaper of general circulation in county, or both, and declares an emergency and is effective on passage. The measure has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Thank you. Discussion about House Bill 2829.
Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I think you had the hearing when I was gone. I haven't been able to find out. Was there any objection from the newspaper folks on this particular one?
No. On this one, the newspapers were okay with this.
They were okay. That's because there have been a lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of these public.
You weren't the only one that asked me that question.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you. Just wanted to know.
So with that, Samantha, can we have a vote?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Penny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 2829, having received required votes, passed to the floor. Again, committee, I think this one we can put on the consent calendar as well. Unless there's any objection to that. Seeing none, we'll put it on the consent calendar. Close the work session on House Bill 2829. And committee, now we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3144. Bob, give us a description of House Bill 3144, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3144 allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to administer and enforce all or part of a municipal building inspection program, provides for joint management of building inspection programs, allows sharing of duties, resources, functions, and powers under intergovernmental agreements, specifies rules and procedures for agreements and shared building inspection programs, changes mandatory language to permissive language in instances where a municipality or county ceases administration and enforcement of a building inspection program, and prohibits municipality from resuming administration of the building inspection program for a period of 2 years after abandonment of the program.
Great, thank you. I wanted to bring up Mark Long first from the Building Codes Division on this bill. And good afternoon. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, for the record, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Long, Administrator of State Building Codes. I've got a PowerPoint presentation I'd like to kind of walk you through on this bill because it's part of a package of bills that we're working with rural Oregon and members of the various counties to improve the regulation in rural Oregon. It's a big theme for building codes this session, and if you bear with me, I'll get through this quite quickly. Just some background for some of the members of this committee. I haven't been here yet. We have a state building code system here in Oregon. And as a matter of fact, this is the 40th anniversary of creation of that system. And back in 1973, the goal was to create a uniform standard across the state, a single place to resolve issues, an efficient, predictable construction environment to help with that by having a standard that would be used in all the various jurisdictions that carry out the programs, professional standards for building officials. We work with 7 advisory boards. And just something for this committee to know that the permit fees fund these programs. The fees are dedicated. We do not receive any general tax dollars. When you administer the local programs in Oregon, there's about 130 city county programs right now. They may assume those programs with a request through our department. If the program isn't carried out at the local level, then we provide the service. Currently, we provide service in Umatilla County, parts of Morrow, Coos County, and parts of Curry County, and then a whole bunch of other things where we're helping out right now. The local building permit fees are dedicated to the activities of the building inspection, can't be used for other activities, and you may be familiar, we're working on training and education, kind of a common theme today. Local governments must use state-certified inspections for staff, and we've heard a bill in one of the other committees where we're trying to improve that system as well. Just to give you a sense what's going on in rural Oregon, kind of the purpose for House Bill 3144 and the other measures that we're working on, this is the permit revenue. Again, this is paid by the contractors, consumers, building owners that perform construction. This is as reported to us from the various 130 jurisdictions, and you can see that we've had a dramatic drop-off from our $75 million here in 2007, which is close to the high, down to about 48 now. When I flip the slide, you're going to see this on a county-by-county breakdown. And when you look at, the colors don't come out real well. It's orange and green. I was trying to be in the middle of the road. It would be green and yellow if it had my preference, but I know there's others in the room that might feel differently. But the orange areas have had a 40 to 80% decline, and this includes the cities within those counties of where we've got the data. And so it's our opinion with these 20 counties that they're going to need some help in the future. Some counties are supporting their programs, hanging on, using general fund dollars. Some counties support these programs, have timber payment issues that I'm sure you're all familiar with, and We think that House Bill 3144 and some of the other measures are really going to help. And there's just some natural areas where we could work on partnering arrangements. This is the permit count, just to kind of give you a sense. So we have declining revenues in our areas. And then, again, the green areas have less than 500 permits. So you have declining revenues. Costs do go up for all of us in the business. And then you have large areas to cover with not much activity. So it's got to be it's got to be an efficient system, and we got to work on making the system easier to do business down the road. So what I've tried to do, again, we're here on House
Bill. Representative Smith, you have a question real quick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry,
can you go to the previous slide?
Yeah. Oh, no, I hope I can do it. Okay, that one or the next one?
Yeah, help me understand how Gillum and Sherman and Wheeler County have 501 to 8,000.
Chair Holvey, Representative Smith, because it's a collection of five or six counties in that area that's run through
a
consortium,
of the whole
and
county.
It's the collection of it. And
thank
then
you.
We had a few windmills in the area in the last 5 years.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Part of that.
Every one of those things is a permit.
Right.
How many thousand of those things are checked?
So I know I'm here to talk about House Bill 3144, but Chair Holvey and the committee, I wanted to kind of give you a background on the bills that we're working on related to rural regulation, improving regulation in rural Oregon. So 2698 helps us with the inspection workforce. We've had a hearing in another committee. 3326, I believe, is in this committee, trying to improve the code system in rural Oregon. 3144 today, and then 2978, although it's consistent enforcement tools, it does provide some mechanisms for jurisdictions, and so we added that to the list. There are other bills that we're also working on that were really geared at county assistance that came out of either interim task force or discussions during the short session last year. House Bill 2206, we're part of a kind of a combination bill with Revenue, Veterans, and Secretary of State, sponsored by DAS to look at county issues should programs come back if there was an emergency. We have this bill, and then there's a bill on the Senate side, Senate Bill 582. So for this bill, just so the committee is aware, we do need to make some amendments to it. It's a complex set of issues trying to provide these partnering agreements, and we've been working on those since the bill came out, and we appreciate the efforts of the drafters. They've done a great job in getting us very close. But the purpose is to create regional partnerships. I think the future is going to be to look at some of these areas and where there's agreement. We're not suggesting the state's going to come in and change anything, but if I can work with counties and they're in agreement, we can come in, and maybe I can provide management services or IT services, some of the things that we're pretty good at the state, local officials, maybe staffing or facilities or whatever. We'd like to create those regional partnerships and combine resources and have the flexibility to respond to the construction needs and have better tools to assist rural Oregon, and that's what this package is about. With that, I think that's the end of my slideshow, and I'd be happy to take any questions that you have. I know you have other folks who want to speak to the bill as well.
Thank you. So that concludes your testimony on 3144. Questions from the committee? I think you must have dazzled us with all that, and I'm sure we'll probably have questions down the road.
Yeah.
So, and just to be clear, you did mention you were going to need amendments to 3144. So,
yes, Mr. Chair, we have a range of amendments that really take the issues one at a time and make sure one of the pieces is to make sure that when we set these up, it's in full agreement how you work those pieces out. Looking at some of the staffing components we'll need to help support counties and making sure we can share resources. It's easy to talk about combining resources, but it's not as easy to get the kind of the state statutes and the local needs to work together in harmony. And that's what we're working on.
Good luck.
I think it's important.
Yeah, we do too. So thank you very much for your testimony. And up next, I'd like to go ahead and have Judge Steve Grasty come back up, and Scott Campbell as well. Thought we were done with you, but you're back. Welcome again, and you do have to identify yourself for the record again.
Sure. So for the record, Chair Holvey, I'm Steve Grasty, and I'm Harney County Judge. So thanks again, and you obviously aren't rid of us yet. And by the way, this is not a tag team. This kind of occurred out of nowhere. One of my constituents would be over here at the same time. So it's a good thing, and it reflects what's happening out there.
Mm-hmm.
This to me is a similar bill to the one I talked about a few minutes ago. This is an opportunity for us, for county government, to work together. Mr. Long did a nice job of presenting the challenges that we've got. Sometimes, in fact, we have resources that have more expertise in an area than the state may, or vice versa, at least in that area. And we need a two-way street where we can work together. I'm sure Mr. Campbell will talk about this, but a lot of the building permits between Harney and Grant County have gone onto his property of late, and yet he has to deal with two completely different organizations because of part of the ranch being in Harney County and part of it being in Grant County. And we've worked really hard to make sure there wasn't any conflict between the two, but this law will allow us, or this change in law will allow us to be a lot more creative at that than that, and make sure that we're not creating those kind of issues for any of our local businesses to overlap. So I think the flexibility is there. The fact this is a really collaborative way to do it, whether it's our resources flowing to the state or vice versa. And as Mr. Long said, this is not a you'll do it or else from the state government telling county government how to do it. It's how do we work this together and what works best right there at that spot today. And so I'm here to recommend support.
Thank you.
Mr. Campbell.
Representative Holvey and everybody else on the committee. Again, my name's Scott Campbell, for the record. A couple of years ago, with the help of the legislature, we started and the courts from both counties, we started an experiment on the ranch to try to figure out, you know, how we could possibly, you know, figure out another kind of business that might provide jobs, you know, in that part of the state. As we all know, you know, jobs in Harney and Grant County and other parts of Eastern Oregon are few and far between. You know, we've got a timber industry that got a lot of its own issues, for sure. And even though ranching is doing well, it takes fewer and fewer people, you know, and there's just, you know, the average age of the folks that live there are shrinking and so forth. I grew up in Burns, and in fact, I think my dad delivered your kids, right? And so my dad was a human doctor. You know, my grandparents, you know, homesteaded in Umatilla County. And so what we're trying to do is figure out, you know, is there some kind of industry we can do over there? And so most ranches have an opportunity for some kind of guest services. And if you remember, we expanded the guest ranch legislation to allow us to build a guest ranch there. Which we've been working at. You know, when I talked to, you know, a lot of the committees before, when I was here talking about that, we thought it was a 3-year project. Well, you know, we're 2 years behind on the 3-year project, you know, because it is so hard to deal with a lot of the agencies and building codes and everybody. Everybody's there to help, you know, and they can't, you know, they're not authorized to work together, you know, and you know, it's just really a mess. And so my promise at that time was to not just, you know, build a guest ranch and prove that a guest ranch would work, but also, you know, try to solve the problem so that if it does work, then other people are able to do it. Because frankly, you know, I'd rather not share my ranch with everybody else. But clearly we need, you know, other job opportunities and so forth, and economic development in that part of the state. And you know, hopefully, you know, we can get something done on the forests and so forth, but that's never going to be like it was. And the cattle industry and the haying industries are going to be there, and they'll be good industries, but they're going to take fewer and fewer people. And so, anyway, in my prior life before this, I lived in Portland, And still do once in a while when it's 27 below in Sylvie's, I go back to Portland. but most of the time I live in Sylvie's, and we're working on this guest ranch. And I have built veterinary hospitals. I built 750 veterinary hospitals. So I built them in about 44 states, in Mexico City, actually, a couple other places in Mexico and in the UK. And the least efficient, the place where I need the most efficiency to drive down the costs are in Eastern Oregon, and it is the least efficient place to build. And it's the least efficient because it's a long ways from everywhere, and there's not a lot of expertise. And so all that has to be brought in, you know. And the materials may cost the same in Portland as they do in Sylvie's, but then you got to pay shipping on top of it. And the trades, you know, may cost the same, but you got to buy them a hotel room or something, because those trades don't exist in that part of the state. And, you know, on and on and on. And so we've been working with Mark and DQ and everybody to try to figure out better ways to do these things. The rural codes really need a lot of improvements. It's not the same as in a big city. You know, if I have to put a sprinkler system, we're going to build a clubhouse over there, you know, for the golf course, and it's going to be 2,200 square feet. You know, that's a small house. And because it's commercial use, we have to put a sprinkler system in it. Now, how sprinkler systems work are you have to hook a fire engine up to them for them to work. Well, we can't get a fire engine there for about an hour and a half. 2,200 square feet building going to burn down a little sooner than that, and it costs about, you know, $20,000 to put it in. I mean, these are crazy, crazy things. But, you know, the no matter how much the agencies or the counties, you know, want to help, they've got their hands tied and they can't. It's the same thing on these, you know, and if other people do this, you know, I've got an architect. He's the guy that designed the 750 veterinary clinics. But if other people are going to do this and have, you know, their ranch have a little bed and breakfast or whatever, you know, they're going to be working on their ranch all the time, and they're going to try to, you know, get into town to get the permit, and they don't, you know, these are little things. They don't need to get an architect stamp and an engineering stamp, and these are, you know, nuts. It's just absolutely nuts.
So I take it you're in support of the bill.
I'm in support of the bill. You guys should really understand how important it is, because if we don't figure out how to you know, make building more efficient in that part of the state, there isn't going to be any new building in that part of the state. Which means that then, you know, what you're going to, you know, you can either, you know, make it cheaper to build the buildings over there, or you can supplement buildings over there, or not have anybody live over there. But those are really the choices, because the, you know, I also, my wife's family has the Burns Garage and Burns Ford dealership, and you know, it was a 100-year-old building, and you know, a couple years ago when we had all the snow, you probably saw it. It was on USA Today. You know, it caved in, and you know, we had to build a new building, and it was the same thing. I mean, these are crazy, crazy rules. And we finally, Steve just kind of let us go ahead without permits. I think we didn't get the permits until after the building was done.
Did you hear that, Mark?
You know, thank God. You know, because, you know, we have 20 people working for us that wouldn't have jobs.
Steve's the name of my brother.
So, you know, the bottom line is, you know, we really need this committee's help
to get this bill passed.
Well, thank you.
You know, because it's important.
Thank you. And we're hearing you loud and clear on this. And, you know, we have a really long list yet in front of us. And I so appreciate you coming here to make your point. We've heard you, and I know the Building Codes Division is listening, and you know we're going to do our best to try to make things more efficient for you.
Great, thanks.
In the future. So
thank you very
really,
much.
That's really great. Appreciate.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have anybody else on 3144? We have Nathan Phillips, Brian Krieg, and Daryl Fuller up next, please. Thank you, gentlemen, and well, Mark Long's writing up a violation for the judge. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Brian Krieg, representing the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors and the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association. We're here in support for the concepts behind 3144. A little bit of quick background. In 2011, 2 years ago to almost this month, there was an alert from the folks in Coos County that was proffered out to the Building Codes Division about the issue of them potentially returning their Building Codes program to the state. As we all know, the situation is very difficult down there. A very unique thing happened, a very positive thing down there. Their entire industry came together, and they decided they wanted to keep their program. It was really important to them to do that, and they raised their fees. Now, we've heard a lot of comments of other issues about raising fees in some of those areas and how challenging that has been, but that occurred, and that actually allowed us to dodge a bullet, because one of the things we discovered as we were looking back at all the rules and the regulations, that while for the last 20, 30 years we've been allowing the programs to go out, we never really built a simple or expeditious way to have one returned to the state. And that is something we just, no one foresaw it, that situation ever happening that we're in right now. So we need to put a pathway in place. And we really need to do it now so that if we do have a problem out there, we can move expeditiously to take care of it. Working with the different local governments, this bill would allow us to do that. The current situation is too restrictive and cumbersome. Industry, for our industries, the concerns really are is disruptions in permitting, plan reviews, and inspections at the local level due to uncertainty or inability to conduct the required services. Basically, end up with a freeze on what we're doing down there. You could have a building about halfway done and needing certain inspections, and if we have this problem where the thing comes back to the state, the amount of time that it's going to take to sort through the rules and regulations now that we have in place and options on that to get inspectors in place, the building's going to sit there idled for, it could be months under the current situation. That doesn't work for anybody. Damages the local economy and is really a negative for our businesses. So we need continuity out there and assurances from the state that regardless of who's in charge, we'll be able to continue work. And the services that we pay directly for, the fees, those permit fees and those inspections, that those are those services which are required by law, we have to get the building permits and inspections, are going to get covered in an expeditious manner again. So what the bill does in many ways, it provides some flexibility, allows the department to partner with folks out there and create new structures for the future that will work. It's going to be nimble, so if we have a crisis where an actual department would have to come back, we can pick up the football and move quickly and keep the disruption to the most minimal situation. There's probably some efficiencies out there of the different groups being able to work together more in the future where we can get some cost savings also for all the parties. And the last thing that is in the bill, transparency. If we're making these kinds of changes, people need to know what's going on with that. The building codes boards will be sounded out on the changes, and then Mr. Long has put in an item in there to give a report back to the legislature about the types of changes that he made in the system so that you would know and so that we've done the right thing. So in wrapping up, we really encourage the legislature to help us. This is a jobs bill, and your support of it would be a big help for us out there. Thank you.
Welcome. Good afternoon. If you could introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Chairman Holby. My name is Nathan Phillips. I'm an electrical contractor down in Eugene. I also have a development company, so I see these issues from both sides, both the owner's side and the contractor side, and I've been a licensed electrician for about 40 years in this state. And I'm also here representing the National Electrical Contractors Association today. We're in support of this concept and the bill, and interested in seeing what the amendments are. We do a lot of work in rural areas as well. There's rural areas besides Eastern Oregon that are affected by the kinds of inefficiencies that Mr. Campbell was talking about. We see local government in the rural areas struggling sometimes with the ebb and flow of construction work, and this bill allows for a more flexible and dynamic approach to meeting the industry's needs, so that they can partner together and create new structures. The workforce in our industry is not static. We, as contractors, we hire employees and build up our workforce when we have a lot of work, and when things get slow, people get laid off, and the work, both in the field and in the office, ebbs and flows with the workflow. And on the inspecting side of the equation, the same thing happens. Their demand ebbs and flows. And local government really has the tools to respond to that with flexibility. They can expand and contract their workforces pretty rapidly, but building codes as a state agency is not able to do that as well. And this bill gives them more flexibility and allows them to do that. The agency is all fee supported. It's paid for, as you've heard, by our permit fees, and we have a long-standing relationship with building codes, and we've seen them manage their workforce effectively as our permit revenues have gone up and down, and so we're in support of allowing them this additional flexibility. It's a very transparent process with the boards and the board's authorities in these areas, so we think that it can work, and we support it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. Good bill should pass. Be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think we're just going to probably suspend with the questions on this particular bill, as we have potential amendments to come back and talk about later some other day. I appreciate your testimony on this today, and I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3144, and I know there's some anxious people waiting House Bill 2830, judging from the amount of people we have on the next bill, and maybe two. We won't be hearing that bill today. So with that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3145. I'd like to have Mark Long come back up first, please.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good afternoon again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mark Long, Administrator of State Building Codes. House Bill 3145, just want to be very clear, is not part of our rural package that we're bringing forward to you. This is a bill that requires capital construction projects over a certain threshold size to be performed by the state. You're going to hear in testimony, both in favor or opposed to the bill, some of the impacts that it may have on local government. And I want to be clear, from the state's position, building codes, it's not in our interest to make local programs not viable, which this bill would have a chance of doing. And so we've been talking with the various industry folks that are interested in this bill, as well as local government. Many of you know, and I know the chair knows, I have a group that I meet with every few weeks where we get folks together to try to talk about these things. I'm happy to go through the bill point by point, but I think you'll hear that many of us want to get offline and talk about some of the issues that impact construction projects, how we might be able to improve the system, because I think all of us recognize when you're spending scarce resources, the project needs to be efficient, it needs to be coordinated well, the costs need to be controlled, gotta have excellent customer service, I want to make sure you have compliance with the various rules, and sometimes in the state there isn't adequate capacity, and so the question is what do you do? With that, I will, I guess I'll just close in that, again, you're going to hear a great deal of concern. I've been fielding several phone calls over the last couple of days since the hearing was announced, and we would like, after, if you're okay, Mr. Chair, to go off and get together and use the forum that we have to discuss this bill and see if we can come bring something back down the road. Any questions of me?
Thank you. Well, thank you for giving that little introduction of the situation this bill's in. It seems there's a bit on both sides of this bill, so I'm sure there's some conversations that need to happen for sure. So thank you for facilitating that. I think I'm going to bring up some proponents of the bill first. Nathan Phillips, Brian Krieg, and Daryl Fuller, please. Welcome, and if you'd again introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Chairman Holby. My name is Nathan Phillips, and I'm representing NECA today. We're in support of the concept of this bill, and as Mr. Long said, we understand that there are some problems with it that need to be addressed with amendments. But what we've seen is that, like in our area, we have a very large project going on in Junction City. It's a big hospital being built by the state, and we have a small city there that has never seen a project of this size before. It's resulted in a real stress for their ability to handle it. They've contracted out that service, and it's resulted in big fee increases that were suddenly imposed that resulted in cost to the taxpayers. Ultimately, there's concerns about the quality of the plan review, about the quality of enforcement, and generally higher costs. This idea of having building codes step in on these large state-funded projects, we think, is a good one. They're the ultimate authority for code interpretation in the state, so they have the technical expertise and the staff to handle this at a lower cost, faster, which saves money in construction, and with more technical accuracy, which will benefit the contractors as well as the taxpayers. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, Brian Krieg, Sheet Metal Air Conditioning Contractors and the Plumbing Mechanical Contractors Association. Mr. Phillips has actually said almost everything I was going to say. It is a situation, I think, that this bill needs a little more focus, needs to be narrowed down. But when the state does have a large facility that has a certain level of complexity to it, there is a rationale, I think, for the taxpayers from a cost standpoint, and just from a technical efficiency standpoint for all the parties involved, that the state takes a lead in the coordination of it. The state could take a number of levels of that. They might do the plan review, and the permitting and or the inspection. There's different components, and some of that could be farmed out to the local jurisdiction in those situations. There is a good example of doing this, actually, when we started building prisons a number of years back in the state. Those are very complex facilities that have a lot of intergovernmental issues that are involved with them, and the building codes took the lead in those, and I think we saw a lot of efficiencies within that construction process on that, and we were able to get the jobs done very effectively in those cases. So I think we'd be very interested in talking with other folks and trying to dial this down a little bit in the focus on the bill.
Thank you.
Chair, members of the committee, again, Daryl Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. Won't belabor the committee with comments that have already been made. We think this makes sense for the state in terms of both efficiency, time, cost savings, and expertise. We're certainly happy to work on the bill to make it narrow in focus if that helps some other folks, but we think this is a good move for the state and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Quick questions of these folks. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. I've sort of been following some of the Junction City issues as well, and it does seem like it's a tough one. You know, when you get a big project like that in an area that maybe doesn't have the expertise to handle it, and how we go about doing that's, I think, an important thing for the same reasons we have issues with making sure we have efficiency in rural Oregon as well in other aspects. So thanks for bringing this up. I think it is something we need to pay attention to. Thanks, and so we're going to bring back the judge from Harney County again, Steve Grasty. He's making a day of it here. And let's bring up Emily Ackland. And I think that's good. We'll just bring up those two at the moment.
Thank you. And
welcome back.
For the record, I'm Steve Grasty, Harney County Judge. And Chair Holby, thanks for the opportunity one more time. And when I get done, I'm going to start the five-hour drive home. I thought that was an interesting comment that was made earlier about a city that maybe got in over its head. In fact, that's the very conversation I've been having with Mr. Long about how can we do things where we can share that. One of our old county commissioners that's not a county commissioner anymore, Ben Boswell, once upon a time said, if you've seen one county, you've seen one county. And it's true, we're all different. And in our case, I want that help, and we'd actively do it. So as this is rethought and a little work group's put together to think through it, I hope that's considered. And as it stands, the Association of Oregon Counties is opposed to this bill because it undermines our ability to do the big projects along with the small projects and have viable building inspection programs. And then as I close, I want to remind Mark Long that I have a very close working relationship with the Harney County deputies, and he comes to our county a lot.
Good afternoon.
Oh, yes, please. Okay. Introduce yourself for the record.
Yeah.
Well, we're all trying to compose ourselves.
Representative Holvey and members of the committee, my name is Emily Ackland. I'm the Environmental Policy Manager at the Association of Oregon Counties, and I think I was sick one day and I got assigned building codes. And I'm not going to reiterate what Judge Grasty said. I think the message I wanted to deliver is that, you know, many counties do implement the building codes the building codes program, and they do it really efficiently. And I have just an example that Umatilla County provided me. Umatilla County does not handle building inspections. The state does. And a typical plan review takes 2 to 6 weeks. The process is that the county receives the plan. It's mailed to Salem. If there are issues, it gets snail mailed back to the county, and then the process starts all over again. A few months ago, a local contractor came in with plans for a building expansion to a local food processing facility, and that contractor was doing essentially the same work in the neighboring county, Morrow County, who does do the building inspection program. And when they asked the builder, they said the plan review by the state for the project in the Umatilla County would take 2 to 6 weeks. The plan review in Morrow County would take just a few days. And so for the inspection then after that, the process is the same. So again, you know, when the counties do implement the program, it is very efficient. So thank you.
Thank you. Don't see any questions on that. Appreciate you coming and testifying on this one too, and we'll be following it, as I'm sure you will be.
Safe trip.
You know, I have a note that someone here wanted to testify on House Bill 2978 that needed to leave. Is that an accurate statement? Because I do have four or five more people on this bill, so at the moment, I'm going to go ahead and I'll come back to it. I'm going to close the House Bill, public hearing on House Bill 3145, and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2978. Seeing as how you've traveled here. Mark, you want to come ahead and come on up with Nathan Phillips, please?
You stop the whole show.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon again. Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Mark Long, Administrator of State Building Codes. House Bill 2978 is a bill that it intends to improve our enforcement system at the State Building Codes Division. We have 7 advisory boards we work with multiple programs where we license contractors in the electrical, plumbing, boiler, elevator world, as well as address permits and unsafe conditions. And the purpose of this bill is to make sure that across those boards and across those programs we have consistent enforcement provisions so that we can take better enforcement actions. I will note
built for you, that we do have a dash one amendment that we've provided to the committee. Hopefully you have it. Should you consider to move this bill, that is a replacement for the bill. We made an error in our communication with the drafters, and this bill is more in line with what we've communicated to industry, to our boards, and what we were looking for. I've brought with me Andrea Simmons, which is the manager of our enforcement section in building codes, who helped draft the bill for us, and if there are any technical questions, she's able to address those, but if not, I can turn it over to Nathan.
Thank you. Nathan, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Holby. My name is Nathan Phillips, and as I've said, I'm an electrical contractor in Eugene. I served on one of these advisory boards for 12 years, the Electrical and Elevator Board, and was chair of it for the last three, so I'm pretty familiar with the enforcement actions that go through that board, at least. And this bill continues the efforts to create consistency across the program areas in building codes that was started about, 6 years ago, 8 years ago, with House Bill 2181, which as chair of the electrical board, I chaired the board chair, vice chair process to try to write rules to bring all these things into consistency. And we're very much in support of continuing that effort. As we've said, the building codes division is funded with our permit fees, and anything that's done to make our fee dollars be used more efficiently is something that we're going to support. And as you get into the details of this bill, you'll see that you have in all of these seven different program areas, you've got different rules for how to handle the various kinds of issues that come before them, and it creates a lot of work for the division to work their way through these rules and make sure that they're handling each of the cases in accordance with the statutes. This bill also responds to what I've seen on the board as an ever-changing effort by a small group of folks who want to evade the permitting and licensing requirements to come up with new creative ways to do so, and it plugs some of those loopholes. And finally, what I think is important to remember about this bill is that it's not about licensing or jurisdictional issues between trades. It doesn't really address any of that kind of stuff. It leaves the status quo in place. It's really about enforcement of the existing rules. And we would be concerned if it was eroding or changing the existing agreements that we have. And it doesn't really get to that. It's really about how to enforce the licensing and permitting laws more efficiently.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? You know, we haven't had a lot of time to look at this dash one amendment, and it's pretty extensive for certain, so it may be that we will give the committee some more time, and when we come back, this bill probably provide another public hearing on this one as well. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I actually read the bill and the amendments, and I have no issues at all. I think that it's time that we do this. I would like to mention that I would like to talk with Mr. Long about the possibility of having another little problem that is involved in this kind of area corrected with a small amendment, and that is that presently, if you are working on computers and you need to run a wire between a server and a desktop, you have to have the same licensing that you would have to have if you were doing major electrical work. And so we were contacted by a guy who does that, and he says, I can't hire anybody to do this kind of work because I can't afford to pay them when they're not doing the scope of that license, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And so he could hire a couple people if he could have them work under his license or have this one little line taken out, which would not require that of low voltage data of people that are working with computers, just that kind of thing. So anyway,
special little issue there for you.
Chair Holby, Representative Richardson contacted me just a little bit ago, and I'd be happy to sit down with him and figure it out. The last time we really looked at limited energy issues, I believe, was back in the 01 session.
I'm impressed that he's read the dash one amendment. It took me a while just to read the bill. So.
Yeah, I probably won't comment on that.
Good.
But I'll be happy to sit down with the representative and see if what I think I understand the issues and see if there's an opportunity. We brought a bill for you that didn't address the scope of practice issues, and I need to keep my commitment to the industry and my boards that I work with that we haven't done that. But if in talking with folks, if there's interest, I'll be happy to report back to the committee and to Representative Richardson.
Thank you. Other questions? Not seeing any. Thank you very much, and I'm sure we'll have some more conversations about this one. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2978 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3145. And up next we have Tracy Rutan, Vicki Woods, Dan Eisenberg, and Tom Phillips, a panel of four as requested. Oh, okay. Looks like Tom Phillips is going to sit this one out.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tracy Rutan, and I'm here today on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. And I will actually go ahead and echo Emily Ackland's comments from AOC that I cover primarily natural resource issues, and I'm pretty sure that when I joined the League a month ago, nobody mentioned building codes, but they ended up on my desk. So I am here today to testify in opposition of House Bill 3145. I think we've got concerns due to the broad nature of the bill as it's currently drafted, and we would welcome the opportunity to do some further work on the bill and work with proponents to try and figure out if we can find a way to narrow the legislation. I think that it could have some unintended consequences for local government programs across the state that work right now, and they work well. There are some other issues I think that we would probably like to look at narrowing, including the $1 million threshold for state-funded projects. And also working just to ensure that cities can maintain some level of certainty and local control over their programs. I'm not the expert on this, so I'll hand it over to, with the permission of the chair, of course, to Vicki Woods with the City of Salem to give you some further background.
Good afternoon, Chair Holvey, Vice Chairs Lively and Richardson, members of the committee. Thank you for having us here today. I really appreciate that. For the record, my name is Vicki Harden Woods, and I am the Community Development Director for the City of Salem. What that means, partly at least, is that I oversee the building and permitting program for the City of Salem. Tom Phillips, who is here with me, is the building official for the City of Salem, and if you ask a technical question, I'll turn around and look at him. First of all, I have been impressed with your wrestling with trying to handle the wide range of jurisdictions we have in the state of Oregon. And this is another bill that, you know, does one size fit all. From the perspective of the City of Salem, what I want to say is we agree that there needs to be good coordination and expedited permitting for all building projects, whether they be state or private, and we work very hard in Salem to do that. We know that predictable and efficient permitting processes are essential to helping to lower the cost of construction. And we strive hard to do that in Salem, and we're very experienced at it, particularly with state projects, as you might imagine, as a state capital. We've done many large, complicated state projects. We have provided predictable and coordinated and efficient service to do that. An example is a multi-$100 million state hospital project that was completed here in just the last year or two. A great addition to our city, and a way for us to show how well we can handle those kinds of activities. We know the state needs to conserve costs and expedite construction, but we're concerned about this specific bill because of the impact it may have on communities that are more sophisticated and perhaps can deliver better, more concentrated, more coordinated service than if it's parceled out to the state. And we're trying to protect the viability of that program and the ability for us to do that for the state. So to conclude, we do have concerns with this bill. At this point, we are opposed to it, but we want to offer ourselves up. We want to be part of trying to refine that focus and maybe reduce some of the broad impact of it and help it make work, help it to work for everyone. Thank you again for the opportunity.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, for the record, Daniel Eisenbeis with the City of Portland. We would also like to express our opposition to House Bill 3145, at least as it's currently drafted. In the City of Portland, we take our responsibility for reviewing proposed developments very seriously and try to provide very good customer service. Part of that is having good coordination at the local level. Many projects not only involve the building code, but also transportation issues, for instance. There's the fire and life safety issues, potentially zoning code issues. In the City of Portland, we actually have staff from various arms of the city co-housed at the Bureau of Development Services. We feel that taking projects out of the local building code review process and having the state become responsible for that would actually lead to a more inefficient outcome. So would agree with the comments that Ms. Ackland offered earlier, and I won't belabor the point, but we would be happy to participate in a work group if that's helpful. Thank you for your consideration. Be happy to take any questions.
Questions from this committee? So I do have a question, you know, because it's kind of apparent to me, you know, we have Salem and Portland sitting here, and, you know, some of our discussions have been about around the expertise of some of our cities as far as handling, you know, more complex projects. So I'm curious, do your cities, you know, contract out to some of these inspection services around special construction issues?
I would have to check on that and get back to you, Chair Holby.
I, however, know the answer to that. Again, for the record, Vicki Harden-Woods, we maintain contracts to be able to do that. We do not exercise them. I think at the peak of the, you know, what we need is some flexibility so that if we get real busy very quickly, we can deliver that service. So we maintain a contract. I don't think we've used one in years. And even at the peak of the building when we were very busy, I don't think we used that service, if at all, or maybe very infrequently.
And I guess part of my question is that, you know, maybe the League of Oregon Cities may be able to answer. I'm just kind of curious, when you do contract out for, you know, some special inspection services or engineering inspections, you know, what kind of criteria do you have for those people that you contract out to, and does the fee structure stay in place through the city, or does the fee structure go up for these contracted out services? I'm just kind of curious how all that plays out for the contractor. You know, does the contractor end up having a different set of fees for the contracted out piece of the engineering or inspection services?
Chair Holby, you have officially gotten me into the technical aspects, so I'm going to go ahead and maybe see if we could call up Tom Phillips with the City of Salem to answer your question, if that would work for you.
And it might be a more general question, too, for the League, I suppose, for some of the smaller cities, you know, and how that's handled and whether they're subject to the same sort of, you know, turnaround time, whether they're, you know, whether the fee structure stays in place, and whether we have, you know, criteria for what that fee structure is, whether it keeps consistent.
Hello, my name's Tom Phillips. I'm the administrator for the Building and Safety Division for the City of Salem. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you on this question. Currently, the way that it works in Salem, we, like Vicki Woods has said, we have these contracts in place when the workload is such that we can't handle it. That has not happened for quite some time that we've gone out to third parties. We also have a third party for a structural engineer review to make sure that if our structural engineer who we have on staff is unable to do reviews, we can call on them to make sure that we have the expertise that is necessary. When it comes to third parties, though, there is no fee change. We absorb that fee, we absorb that cost as part of our permit fee if we send it out. Now, obviously, if somebody came in and wanted something outside of the box and very special, that would be something that we might have to negotiate a fee with. But anything that we choose to send out based on the fact that our workload or our expertise isn't there, we would absorb that cost in the permit fee.
Thank you. Do you know if that's consistent with cities around the state?
That's a good question. I can't speak for all, but for the ones that I know, again, if it's not optional, and that it's something that the city has to do, I would believe most jurisdictions would absorb that cost.
And I guess to follow up on my line of questioning there, I'm kind of curious, is a question for Mark Long perhaps, are there standards or rules in place about the expertise or the criteria for expertise of third-party inspectors?
Yes, there is, and I would defer to Mark Long to answer that question for you.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, just to kind of chime in with your question about the expenses of a third party, and oftentimes, or generally, I think they're going to be non-municipal employees, so therefore you may be able to employ their services at a different, per case or per diem basis or whatever. It could end up being less expensive than your in-house employees provide the same service, correct?
I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly, but I would tell you this. As a building official that's been doing this work for over 20 years, the best service comes from in-house.
Sure.
When we have to ship out, it's because of a specific need, not because, we think they're going to provide better service. It's just a specific need. When we were doing homes back in 2007, we were doing 90 homes a month, we had to ship out to people that were certified by the state to do some of those so that we could keep up with our 10-day guarantee turnaround that we had on single-family dwellings. And then, like I told you before, earlier, when we did the hospital here, not the state hospital, but the Salem Hospital, we had to go out with the engineering on that because our structural engineer was out of the country. So,
one more follow-up, Mr. Chair. Regarding this bill, did this come out of the interim task force as well? Is this a different piece of legislation?
I don't believe.
Seems like it has a little different spirit to it than the bills we've heard previously today.
Yeah, I don't believe it did.
The traits.
Okay, not exactly sure where it came from, actually.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate you answering those questions for me because it's kind of the same issue that we're having in rural, but it's sort of flipped around. I'm just sort of curious about, I guess the delays, the standards, and when things are contracted out, whether or not, those services, are meeting the expectation of both the industry and the government agency, so there's not a huge duplication, one, and two, that it's done in a timely manner, because those can be huge costs to the state, for example, and sometimes to the contractor if there's not a robust turnaround at the permit and fee schedule that the job was started on. And so I was just kind of curious how that works around the state. These are just questions I have have popped up. So appreciate, maybe we'll get some follow-up on that.
Can I make a clarification? The one thing that a lot of the larger jurisdictions do is they have what's called expedited fees. And those fees are to take you basically out of the queue. And because of the complexity of the project or the urgency of the project, Portland, Corvallis, Eugene, Salem have a fee structure in place that allows us to charge a premium to get them out quicker. And that is to cover the cost of overtime for staff to be able to work on it or to be able to put it out to a third party perhaps. But again, that is an optional type of, that's where the developer themselves or the builder themselves want that service versus just our standard service, which we wouldn't charge additional for. So I just want to make sure I clarified that,
right,
Chair.
And to make sure, I'm not questioning the expertise of the staff that any place in the state, really. I'm just curious what happens when, they don't have the expertise and they need to go outside. Are they getting the adequate expertise that they need to keep the job moving, you know. And, you know, if you hire one person and you need 10, you know, that could cause a problem down the road for a lot of people concerned, the taxpayer being the first one that comes to my mind.
Yes.
So, anyway, I'll let you off the hook, and thank you very much for testifying today.
Thank you.
I believe we have exhausted the list on House Bill 3145, so I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3145, and I had no idea I would have time to have a public hearing on the bill that I said that I wouldn't, but I know there's one person here to testify on, so I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2830, and maybe Scott will come charging in from the outside. But Don Miner, you're signed up to speak. Bob, why don't you give us a little information about House Bill 2830. Has something to do with warranties, I think.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2830 requires contractor building a new residential structure or zero lot line dwelling to warranty the building envelope and penetration components for 2 years.
Thank you. Committee, this is a bill from the past that was brought forward. I think the commercial industry, construction industry, offers this two-year warranty, and it was out of a construction claims task force, and Mark Long had left, and he was actually on that task force, that made a recommendation that we have a building envelope warranty on residential properties because of the states and around the country, a lot of people have been suffering a lot of problems with mold and moisture penetration. And so with that, Don.
Good afternoon, Chair Holby, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. Our industry doesn't build commercial buildings. It's residential. And as I recall from the Construction Claims Task Force, that the moisture issues weren't associated with manufactured houses. So we do have some concerns with the bill as it's drafted. The definitions, it applies to all residential structures, which would include not just site-built structures, but manufactured homes, modular homes, etc. And we're unaware of there being a moisture intrusion problem in manufactured houses. If there were a problem, we'd be more than happy to work with the committee to address them if the current mechanisms are ineffective. But there are a large number of measures in place, at least in manufactured housing, to protect consumers against that problem. First, you have the manufacturer's quality control systems. That's overseen by the Department of Housing and Urban Development and Mr. Long's shop. In addition to that, manufacturers offer both express warranties, but because they're goods, there's also implied warranties. We believe we're on the hook for at least 10 years in this state if there were a problem. So a consumer has redress through state law, but he can also, under 24 CFR 3282.401, trigger a recall type process through the federal government. And so if the consumer activates that process through Building Codes Division and HUD, the manufacturer's enforced to investigate it. And if there's a problem, he has to not only fix that house, but if it was a systemic failure, he has to go forward until he quits finding homes that are produced after that home and go back and identify those homes and fix them all at his own expense. When the home is delivered to the site, there are local building officials that are also looking at those homes. And under your leadership, Mr. Chairman, the Construction Contractors Board has adopted rules that require all contractors, including manufactured home retailers, to participate in 16 hours of continuing education, which now includes a three hours of instruction on how to prevent moisture intrusion. I think it's called the BEST system or BEST training. Don't hold me to that. manufacturers also offer consumers a 10-year warranty that they can purchase. So it it covers all failures for a year, mechanical type, electrical, plumbing, mechanical, for I think it's two, and then 10 years on the structural failures. Now, it's not uncommon for manufactured home retailers to deliver a home for a couple, 300 miles away. And the bill as drafted requires that every year the contractor go and inspect that building. And if you get driving a couple hundred miles away, I've been told that that's probably going to cost between $300 and $500 if there's an overnight stay. You look at mileage per diem, not counting the lost opportunities when a person's away from his business. And these costs have to be passed on somehow. I don't think the consumer is going to be willing to write a check for $200 or $300 at the conclusion of that. So those costs will probably be built into the front end of the transaction. And if it's financed for 20 or 30 years, that'll add up considerably. In addition, the bill provides that the warranty that would be required here need not cover conditions resulting from improper maintenance by the homeowner. It's just unclear how that would be determined. So if you get to a building site, the consumer says, there's a problem. The contractor says, yeah, but you caused it. Who referees that? How would that all be resolved? And again, at whose expense? We believe that there are mechanisms in place. Again, we're not aware of there being a problem in our industry with moisture intrusion. But if there is, we'd be happy to address those problems.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. I do note that the manufactured dwellings do fall under a whole different set of regulations, and thank you for pointing that out under this. I will correct you, though, that it was not my proposal that led to the education requirements on the building envelope. That was a different bill that came from the Senate side after they got and stuffed the one that I passed out of the House.
Okay.
Just so I clarify that for the record.
That statement, but I know that you've taken a leadership role in solving these types of problems, right. And you should be applauded for that.
Yeah, well, it still remains a problem for many folks, and but I'm not aware of the manufactured housing problem as well. I haven't heard a lot of feedback from that. So I appreciate your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Miner? Not seeing any, and I think I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill. I didn't see you.
Were the home builders going to testify?
When I carry this bill over and they come back, because I told them I wasn't really going to open the hearing, but I saw Don still sitting there, and he may not want to come back later. So, but yes, they will. So with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2830, and. With that, Bob, I think we're going to carry over House Bill 2830 to our next meeting, and we'll get a chance to listen to the home builders. And anything else left on our agenda? Doesn't appear to be. So thank you, committee, for paying attention. Oh, Representative Johnson.
One final comment, Mr. Chair, and would it be possible for us to make sure that each committee hearing we have at least one panel of witnesses from east of the Cascades? It just brings an entirely new perspective.
I would agree.
Sorely lacking.
Well, we could just have Representative Smith go down there every time.
Can you bring your constituents in more frequently, please?
I just
it would
don't
be
think
very helpful,
that they.
Yes.
I don't think Eastern Oregon would care for that kind of a mandate. I better close this or adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency. Huh?